made possible by listeners like you who donate at wjffradio.org.
Live from Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, this is The Local Edition. I'm your host, Jason Dole. Thank you so much for being here with me. Got a lot of news to get to, and we'll also be asking for your support, because this is the first day of the last 4 days of our fall fun drive. Give now at WJFFradio.org and do it in honor of daily local news and conversations that we bring to you here on Radio Catskill, with Chatskill and Tim Bruno in the mornings, with The Local Edition, with Patricio Rubio and myself here in the evenings. We've always got lots of great conversations and info for you, and it's definitely worth your support because we need the support of listeners like you. When you get a chance, please give online at WJFFradio.org. Well, coming up, the Bud Rue Memorial Walk for Social Justice is happening this Sunday. And Radio Catskill's Nia Watson talks to Tom Rue about the event. We'll find out all the details. But first, our election coverage continues with our regular check-ins with Vote Beat PA. And Vote Beat PA is Carter Walker. And I spoke with him earlier this afternoon for the latest from the Battleground Commonwealth. Carter Walker of Vote Beat PA, with just weeks to go now, less than that, before Election Day. How are things over in the little old Commonwealth of Pennsylvania?
Yeah, well, things, as you'd expect, are heating up. Everybody's eyes, again, are on Pennsylvania because it is looking like it will be coming down to the state. And poll after poll just keep showing that it's going to be a tight race.
I bet. The last thing that we talked about was the timing of the ballot counting on Election Day in Pennsylvania. Do you have any updates on that before we get into any new stuff?
Yeah, so last week your listeners got a bit of a treat, a preview of a story we were working on that we did eventually publish last week, taking a look at how long it's taken counties to process their mail ballots here in Pennsylvania the past couple of years. Because in Pennsylvania, we can't open and start processing, not counting, but just pre-processing our mail ballots, preparing them to be counted before 7 a.m. on Election Day, which officials have cautioned that's a problem for us. It's going to cause delays to our final results. And all that is true, but with the data we gathered, we showed that a lot of counties have improved on this process. They've bought new equipment. They've learned better ways of organizing their operations that have really enabled them to do this quite quickly. And many counties should finish on Election Day. The one really interesting thing that we found when we were looking at this data is that Allegheny County, which is where Pittsburgh is, out of the western part of the state, they're able to process these mail ballots very quickly. About 12,000 ballots an hour in 2022 was what I calculated. And for context, Philadelphia was about 5,000 ballots an hour that year. So, doing quite a bit more than Philadelphia. And so I was wondering, why is that? And the story we eventually published showed that it really comes down to the administrative decisions the two cities have made in their operations. Allegheny has some quicker equipment it uses. Allegheny dedicates more people. And this really does matter because, Allegheny is saying, we think we're going to be finished counting on mail ballots on Election Day, while Philadelphia is saying, it still could take us a day or two. And if the race is going to be as tight as it is looking like it's going to be, how many mail ballots we still have to count could really make a difference in declaring a winner.
Yeah, and any delay in declaring a winner opens up the door to, just about anything could happen in terms of messaging and strategies and possibly even shenanigans. So that's something we're all going to be watching for. Okay. Since then, what are you looking at next?
Well, we're still waiting on these court decisions. If you'll recall, we have two that are pending, both about mail ballots. Well, three, really. One about, if a voter makes a mistake on their mail ballot, does the county have to notify them of that mistake? Another on if they make a mistake, can they go to their polling place on Election Day and cast a just-in-case ballot called a provisional ballot and have that ballot counted. So we're still waiting for the Supreme Court to rule on that. And then we got another one in the court just below the Supreme Court that deals with, again, whether or not voters need to date their ballots. So still awaiting some court decisions ahead of Election Day. But in the meantime, we are keeping our eye on voter registration trends that we've been keeping track of for several weeks, and whether or not what counties' policies are on those mail ballot errors, if voters can fix those errors and still have their vote counted.
Yeah, and this is something that differs from county to county. Is that why it's important to look at it in terms of like a map or something?
Yeah, it differs tremendously. And like you said, we're going to have a story out here in the next day or so that will include a map showing all the policies across the state so that each voter knows, what their county's process is. Some counties will call voters or email them or send them a letter saying, hey, you forgot to put the date on your ballot envelope. You forgot to sign it. And telling them, okay, come down to the office and you can fix that in person. You got to show an ID. Other counties, they just mail that defective ballot back to the voter with a new envelope and instructions about what they got wrong. Some counties don't do any of that. Then there's one-off counties that do some weird combination of those things. So that's the nature of Pennsylvania being a commonwealth where all 67 counties can have different policies if they choose. So we're trying to put together some information that'll let voters know what their options are for where they live.
Right. And just to go back a moment, because you were saying there are some court cases pending, would the court case that's related to the curing, would that possibly bring any kind of consistency to how these 67 different counties are looking at this?
Yes, definitely. There are some things that could change because of those court cases that, a lot of people complain about the fact that just Pennsylvania's practices are so inconsistent from county to county. But there are two cases that could really affect this. There's one from Washington County that deals with whether or not the county should be using these special codes, computer codes, in the system that the state uses to track mail ballots. Should the county be using these special codes that will automatically generate an email to the voter that their ballot is defective? So if the Supreme Court agrees with the lower court, then every county would have to be using those codes. And right now, not every county is using those codes. The other one out of Butler County, which is also in the western part of the state, deals with, okay, I'm a voter and I didn't put my signature on my mail ballot. Well, actually, Butler County deals with some voters that didn't return their ballot in the secrecy envelope, but this would presumably apply to voters who make any type of mistake, not signing it, not dating it, not using a secrecy envelope. And so what is at issue there is if the voters make that mistake, can they go to their polling place on Election Day and cast a provisional ballot? And importantly, not just cast that provisional ballot, but have the county count it. The lower court said they did. Supreme Court, we're waiting on a decision, could come any minute now. And so the combination of those two cases, if the Supreme Court were to uphold the lower courts in both cases, what it would mean is that voters all across the state will at least get an email that they have a problem with their mail ballot, presuming that they provided the county with an email when they registered, and they will at least be able to go to their polling place on Election Day and cast a provisional ballot. But again, we just have to see what the court does.
And talk about provisional ballots, and forgive me for talking about your reporting as almost serving a provisional role, like, because you got to put out what information that we've got now. This is how it is on the ground now. This is how it differs from county to county, knowing full well that there might be some clarification on this within the next week or so.
Yes, that is definitely the case. I mean, that's kind of been the status quo here. For years with not just my reporting, but everybody, other reporters and advocates too, you kind of always have to put an asterisk next to everything you say, because things could change next week. The courts have, I don't think they're fault of their own. They've just been faced with these decisions, but the courts have often issued decisions close to elections that change the rules.
I do want to note that we passed a very important day in Pennsylvania electoral processes. Monday was the last for people to register to vote in Pennsylvania. Did you hear anything about that date passing, or does it make any significance for the work that you're doing?
Yeah, well, as you know, we talked a couple of weeks ago about a story we did on voter registration trends, how many voters we have that are Democrats and Republicans, and you know, what portion of the state's total voters do they make up. And I've been keeping a close eye on that ever since. Like you said, yesterday was the voter registration deadline, and Mondays are also the day that this new data comes out. And I think this is going to change as counties continue to process those applications that came in on the deadline. But since we did that story, the Democrats have continued to decline in their advantage. You know, historically, for many years, Democrats have outnumbered Republicans by a pretty large margin. In 2009, right after Obama was elected, they had a huge bump in registration. So they had 15% more of the state's voters than Republicans. That dropped pretty much in half to 2020, when they only had 7.5% advantage over Republicans. And now it's fallen even further. They're hovering just above the 3% mark. The news there, not good for Democrats, a little better for Republicans. They've been picking up a lot of voters in the past couple of weeks. So we'll see how much that continues to change towards Election Day. But again, you know, as we reported, voter registration isn't everything. It's also about motivating those people who are on the rolls. So just because one party's up or one party's down doesn't mean they've got it in the bag. But, you know, it's certainly another tea leaf that we reporters and election data nerds like to read.
Okay. And is there anything else that you're taking a look at? Any other updates that you have for us?
Well, next week is the deadline to apply for a mail ballot. October 29th, county's going to have your application by 5 p.m. on the 29th. And so I am also going to be taking a look at utilization of mail voting between Republicans and Democrats. As you know, in 2020, former President Donald Trump was disparaging mail voting as insecure, fraudulent, which made a lot of elected officials follow suit and tell their voters the same thing. And it really hurt Republicans with getting their voters to use that method of voting. They have tried to change tune on that in the past couple of years because they realize it's just a tremendous tool to increase your turnout if you don't have to restrict your voters to only one day of voting, and they can, you know, fill out their mail ballot at their convenience. Really helps bump your numbers up. But, you know, question is whether or not that strategy has been successful for Republicans. So I'm going to take a look at the data of how many Republicans versus Democrats are requesting those and see if it's increased any over the past couple of years, and I'll let you know.
Right. And so we'll have some actual data on that to talk about the next time that you and I talk. And we're at this time of the year, at this moment in history, where it's tough to look too far into the future. I know that we will talk again. It will go over this stuff. But as I look at, you know, the election, I do find myself thinking about what's going to happen after the election, not just in terms of the results of the presidential election, but of all of these processes behind the scenes, how the election is administered, not just in my state, New York, or nearby Pennsylvania, but around the country. And when you were talking about, like, for instance, these all these differing county-by-county ballot-curing processes, I don't want to tempt fate by speculating too far into the future, but I'm wondering, are you thinking at all about, after the election, reporting on, okay, which of these things will be fixed, not by courts at the last minute, but in between major elections? Are you thinking at all about that post-election reality of what other work might be done?
Yeah, you know, I think after the 2020 election, it did really increase the appetite in the legislature to make changes to these things. It wasn't successful. You know, they ended up just getting caught up in gridlock, or bills were vetoed or not passed because they didn't include one element or another. And I think, you know, like you said, it's hard to predict, but I think depending on what we'll see in November, maybe it'll spur some more desire to see improvement. You know, if we see counting take a long time again, if we have disputes in one county over this type of ballot curing, and it's not the same as in this other county, I think it might motivate the legislature to make some changes. And another important thing to note is that a great deal of our elected state representatives and senators are up for election this year. So if the control of those chambers, the House and the Senate, switch in any way, it might shake a couple of bills loose and maybe something will move. But that being said, I would temper my expectations just given the track record the past 4 years. You know, there were a lot of opportunities for the legislature to pick some of these issues, and they didn't. So I don't know that I would get too excited that that's going to happen in the next 4 years.
Thank you for speculating with me for a moment, because I am curious. I know whatever happens, you will be looking at it and we'll be talking to you. So, Carter Walker, VoteBeat PA, thank you so much for going over this again.
Absolutely. Happy to do it.
And you can see all of Carter Walker's articles at votebeat.org/Pennsylvania. That's votebeat.org/Pennsylvania. Well, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll learn about this memorial walk that's happening on Sunday. Do stay with us.
You're listening to The Local Edition, winner of Excellence in Broadcasting Awards from the New York State Broadcasters Association. Radio Catskill. Listen local.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from the Artist Cottage Bed and Breakfast, a newly renovated farmhouse that sleeps four with full gourmet cooked breakfast provided daily, located near the top of Hauk Mountain Road in the town of Walton. More information at greatwesterncatskills.com.
And support also comes from listeners like you who go from being listeners to being supporters of the station. And we're asking you to do that very thing right now because we're on the final days of our fall fund drive. So please give what you can at WJFFradio.org. That's WJFFradio.org. And I am Jason Dole. This is the Local Edition. We're going to get back into the program here in just a moment, but we will be looking for your support. So when you can, make your donation at WJFFradio.org. Well, the Bud Rue Memorial Walk for Social Justice is coming up this Sunday. The Upper Delaware Unitarian Universalist Fellowship is hosting this walkathon. Radio Catskill's Nia Watson met with Tom Rue to learn more about this event.
Hello, Tom. Thank you for joining us today. Can you please introduce yourself and tell us what you do for the Upper Delaware Unitarian Universalist Fellowship?
Well, thank you very much for allowing me on here to talk about this activity. For coming up on a year now, I've been the vice president of the Upper Delaware UU Fellowship. My involvement goes in the organization goes back to the beginning, though. We started meeting in 1987 and incorporated in 1990. When we incorporated, I was the president, so I was the first president after we were recognized by the state as an incorporated church. And I stayed active with fellowship for a number of years, and I moved to Monticello and got caught up in other activities that took me away from it. More recently in my life, I have found myself back closer to this area, the River Valley. About a year ago, there were a number of members of the board of directors who had become discouraged and were feeling burned out. There was talk about dissolving the fellowship. I was one of a few people who attended some organizational meetings that were organized by Reverend Lori Stewart, who's a member of the fellowship. The congregation voted in February that we would continue to meet and we would resume meeting weekly. The fellowship had been meeting every other week for a few months during the pandemic. But I agreed to be the vice president on the condition that Lori Stewart would be the president. And I'm grateful that she accepted that. So as vice president, my goal has just basically been to see the organization continue and increase in attendance and participation and bring a liberal religious fellowship alternative to the Upper Delaware River Valley.
And I noticed on the website that the fellowship aims to, quote, create a safe and welcoming space for people of all ages and backgrounds, close quote. So can you just tell me a bit about some of the ways that the fellowship does this, if you want to talk about any past initiatives or just kind of what the inner workings are like in the organization?
Well, I'm thinking back to the very beginning and over the years of the fellowship's existence, its size has gone up and down. Right now, the numbers are down. So it's hard to say that we have a diverse membership now because we have a very small membership. But everyone is welcome. And if you look at on the website, if you look where it says press releases from 2024, that's another thing that I have done as vice president, was send out these press releases and email blasts. We have a mailing list of roughly 100 people and local media outlets. If you look at the types of programs that we've held, the speakers that we've invited in, and the audiences that a number of those speakers have attracted and brought with them, I think that illustrates the kind of diversity that we're interested in supporting.
Okay, great. So now I'd like to transition to talk about the upcoming walk and memorial. Would you mind telling us a bit about who was Bud Rue?
Okay. Bud Rue was my father. To the time period that we're talking about, he was retired. He had retired from teaching. He was a math teacher. And this is my recollection from, I was close with him during his last years. He devoted his last years to volunteer work. He organized Habitat for Humanity in Wayne County. I'm not shy about saying this because it's true. He was the person who took the initiative in Wayne County to get that chapter started, and it immediately caught hold to the point that it's still an active chapter. That's one of the effects of the work that he did in his last years in the nonprofit sector in this local area. My parents used to own a property in Milanville called Innisfree, and that's where the fellowship started. The very, very first meeting was held in the home of Reverend Ray Pontier on the Narrowsburg side of the river. And I think the second meeting in 1987 was held in the recreation hall at Innisfree, which my parents rented, did not charge rent. It was rent-free to the fellowship for the first several years that the fellowship existed. The fellowship contributed something for the heat expense and public liability insurance, but there was no rent as such. So, I mean, that was a concrete contribution that my father made to the fellowship, and the fellowship had its, I would say, ripple effects in the community that are still felt, not just by the birth of organizations like Habitat for Humanity. VIP is on the list this year, Victim Intervention Program. Habitat for Humanity and Women's Resource Center, which was a predecessor of the VIP program in Wayne County, the Domestic Violence Agency, was one of the original beneficiaries of this walkathon in 1993. Let me get back to Bud Rue. He was active in, like I say, in this type of work because Innisfree was meeting in the rec hall on the property that he owned. He was a member of the board of directors at that time, and he came to a board meeting, and as everyone knows, he's very busy with these activities, and I'm paraphrasing him now, but he said that we need to be doing something for the community. What can we be doing? And he pushed on that with the board for a period of months in 1993. And the way it was settled on by the group, and this was not my father's idea specifically, but it was a group process. The discussion led to the idea of holding fundraisers to benefit some local organizations that we support that serve a social justice purpose in the community. And somebody suggested a walkathon. It was called the Walk for Social Justice for the Upper Delaware Fellowship. And the walk went from Narrowsburg to Milanville, which is about 5 or 6 miles. And just a mile or so into the walk, my father sat down on a rock because his leg hurt, and he was picked up by a sweep car who was driving back and forth. He used his asthma inhaler a few times in the car and appeared to fall asleep, according to Reverend Pontier, who was driving the sweep car. And when they got him back to Milanville, he had passed away. So that was a tragedy for my family, obviously. He was 59, and we still feel his loss. But the manner in which he passed drew a lot of attention and drew a lot of donations. And The amount that we raised that first year was a whole lot more than any of us anticipated that we would in, you know, kind of a fundraiser. So we divided it up four ways among the four groups that we had designated. And they're not always the same groups. They get designated by the board of directors each year. It was a pretty natural decision at the time to do it again next year in 1994. And I don't remember whose idea it was to name it the Bud Brewer Memorial Walk for Social Justice, but that's what it's been called since then. Over the years, the Upper Delaware Unitarian Universalist Fellowship has made a substantial impact on the community, far beyond what you would expect from its small number of members.
Yes, and also thank you for sharing your father's story and my condolences to your family. So my next question is just for listeners who might not be familiar with how walkathons work. Can you explain a bit about how the event will go and maybe talk about the route that it will be following?
We're going to start at 10:15 in the Narrowsburg Union, which is where we normally meet in room 102, the former Narrowsburg Central School, as some remember it. And that'll be a brief meeting. We'll talk about the organization's Habitat for Humanity of Wayne County, Victims Intervention Program of Wayne County, Growing Older Together, which is Sullivan County based, and Sullivan Allies Leading Together with SALT. We'll talk briefly about those four organizations. I think that representatives of those organizations will probably all be there. I've heard from SALT, GOT, and Habitat. As far as the route, we will, as I said, we'll be meeting at the Narrowsburg Union, and we'll walk down Bridge Street to turn left on Main Street in Narrowsburg, which is just a few blocks long, and then turn right near the Laundrette restaurant and down into Narrowsburg Flats. And we have a map that it's on our website, upperdelawareuu.org. It shows the route around the flats. It's all a residential neighborhood. We will hope to see some friendly people waving hello as we walk by.
So how are you accepting donations? What are some of the ways that people can donate?
Well, one way is the old-fashioned way is through the U.S. Postal Service, the Upper Delaware Unitarian Universalist Fellowship, P.O. Box 47, Narrowsburg, New York, 12764. If you're doing it that way, it's important to put on the memo portion of the check. This is a donation for the Bud Rue Memorial Fund, or you could abbreviate it BRM or Social Justice Fund or something, just so the treasurer knows this is for the walkathon. In addition to that, this year for the first time, we're also accepting donations on PayPal. So if you go to the website, there's a code that you can scan there with your phone and go in that way. If you have a chance to go to the website and download a pledge sheet and collect some donations, that is much, much better. But if you want to just come and go for a walk with us, you're also welcome to do that.
And so with that in mind, what are you hoping to accomplish with this event?
Well, number one, we want to support the groups that have been chosen this year to benefit from the funds. We want to support the changes that those groups represent and bring to our community. Now, as a fellowship, as an organization, as a congregation, we also hope to continue to exist. But that requires public awareness of who we are and of the kinds of things that we offer and support. Raising funds to benefit housing for the homeless, support services for victims and the elderly, getting food boxes and equity to the communities in Sullivan County.
And is there anything else that folks should know about the event or the fellowship that I might have forgotten to ask?
Wear a hat. If it's raining, what we have said is that we will hold it. We have held them in the past before. Prepare for the weather and wear some good shoes.
That's great advice. Also, as the weather is starting to really get cooler. Thank you so much, Tom Rue from the Upper Delaware Unitarian Universalist Fellowship Vice President. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. It was a real pleasure talking with you.
In Liberty, I'm Nia Watson for Radio Catskill.
Well, thank you so much, Nia, for that report. Big thanks to Carter Walker for staying on top of elections in Pennsylvania. And thank you for listening. That's it for the local edition. I've been your host, Jason Dole. Thank you so much for being here with me. Hey, don't forget, coming up at 7 o'clock, we've got the live debate for Pennsylvania's 8th Congressional District with Matt Cartwright and Bob Bresnahan. That's coming up at 7. It's produced by WVIA-TV. We're simulcasting it live here on Radio Catskill. So Mr. Kusar Grace will be back with Music Emporium next week. We've got special election coverage coming up after the Daily. And then, of course, at 8 o'clock, also, not of course, maybe you didn't know this, we'll be hearing more from the candidates for New York's 100th Assembly District. This is Radio Catskill.